and unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning, dear brothers and sisters in the Dharma. Almost another turn around the sun, and we will arrive at the day when the Buddha awakened and saw the morning star. 3 days ago, we heard the story of the awakening as it was told in the Fear and Terror Sutra. Over the years, I have read much of the Pali Canon, and I have a picture in my imagination what it looked like, what it felt like, what the scene was. The Buddha is on a seat prepared by his attendants. Of course, Ananda is there. The monks traveling with him go about their activities. Maybe they come back from begging in the closest village or city. And Janusonin, the Brahmin, must have heard about this preacher staying at Cheda's Grove near Savati. And he walked there to talk to that preacher because he had questions about the Dharma. And the Buddha told him how to deal with fear, what factors are necessary to be able to do that. And then the Buddha told him the story of his enlightenment. First this happened, then that. These were the necessary factors. And that is what he had learned. Almost like not such a big deal. These are the three things he learned during the night of his enlightenment. These were his realizations. And this is how he found the great release. I'm quoting that passage again just because I love it so much. With release, there was the knowledge released. I discerned that birth is ended, the holy life fulfilled, the task done. There is nothing further for this world. Ignorance was destroyed. Knowledge arose. Darkness was destroyed, light arose, as happens in one who is heedful, ardent, and resolute. A very simple telling. Today, I will present a way more colorful and dramatic version of the same events. It was probably told and retold many, many times. I think it was this story was written down around the year 300 CE, so 800 years later. It did what stories do when they're retold so many times. In this account, Mara visits Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha to be, just before his enlightenment. In case you have not yet encountered Mara, he does need an introduction. In the Samyutta Nikaya, the connected discourses of the Buddha, he's often called the evil one. Well, the evil one, of course we want nothing to do with him. Literally, it actually means the killer. And he's the Buddhist figure of temptation. A very bad guy. He's also called Namuchi, or maybe it's Namuki. I apologize for butchering the pronunciation of these names. So Namuchi means the non-liberator, the opponent of liberation. He's like the devil or the principle of destruction. The most common use of the word was evidently in the sense of death, which is also the meaning in Hinduism. And from that, it was taken the world under the sway of death. So the personification of evil and passions, also the totality of worldly existence. So this is maybe a little bit geeky, but later Pali literature, they often speak of a fivefold Mara. So they assign five aspects to him. As a deity, Devaputa Mara, the Mara of defilements, Klesha Mara, the Mara of the aggregates, Skanda Mara, the Mara of karma formations, Kama Mara, and number five is Mara is death. If we read it superficially, we might start to equate Mara with the Christian devil. But believe it or not, Mara did not start out that way. In the oldest references, the term Mara is just simply applied to the whole of worldly existence, the realm of rebirth, as opposed to Nirvana. He's also regarded as a deity ruling over the highest heaven of the sensuous sphere, that of the deities wielding power over the creation of others. But now back to the night of Buddha's awakening. The Bodhisattva Siddhartha Gautama was sitting under the Bodhi tree with a firm resolve to become a Buddha. When Mara saw Gautama and saw the strong intention, he summoned all his forces, 10 legions, to attack him. Those forces extended 12 leagues in front and back and 9 leagues to the left and right. They were armed with deadly weapons and had assumed the most terrifying forms. But Gautama defeated them all through the 10 paramitas: generosity, virtue, renunciation, transcendental wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. So for the folks of Seattle Soto Zen who studied the paramitas in the practice period, you may notice that this list is different from the one we studied together under Shusochan. And that is because we studied the Mahayana paramitas, and these are the older set of paramitas, more found in the Theravadan tradition. So, Siddhartha Gautama defeated all of Mara's legions. All the weapons are gone, all the fighters are gone, but Mara still does not give up. Mara claims Gautama seat under the Bodhi tree as his own. Mara claims that he has achieved perfect generosity and kindness. And several of his followers show up and affirm those claims. And Mara tries to pull the Buddha off his seat. And he asks them to prove his right to this seat and to bring witnesses to his accomplishments. Now comes this scene that is so often depicted. The Buddha touched the ground and asked the earth to be his witness. And the earth roared in his in response, "I stand his witness." And thus, Mara was defeated again. And some stories say that weeping over his defeat, he fled. So this is like one of the very, very powerful images, the earth witness mudra, the Buddha touching the earth. We often see the Buddha in statues with his left hand palm up in his lap and the right down to touch Mother Earth. And yet, in some versions, the Buddha Mara does not give up. And he gets help from his daughters. Most often, they list three daughters, who, by the way, very willingly came to Mara's support. The three daughters are identified as Tanha, thirst, Aradi, aversion, and Raga, attachment. So here we meet our old friends, greed, hate, and delusion again. Some stories even refer to five daughters, and they include the daughters' fear and pride. So I was always fascinated by the Mara stories, and I was actually quite delighted to find that in the Connected Discourses, of the Buddha, there was a whole collection of those stories all in one spot called the Mara Samyutta. And it shows you all the different variations of the event and later encounters too. But so Mara's daughters show up and they want to distract the Buddha and tempt him away from his seat. They do everything from stripping to begging. The Buddha ignored them. They even manifested as 100 maidens each. The Buddha ignored them too. They continue to show up in different manifestations, trying to find just the type of woman the Buddha might be interested in. And every time they say, "We serve at your feet, ascetic." And still, the Buddha ignores every manifestation. So, Tana, Aradi, and Raga go back to Mara. They say, this is almost funny, that they were so attractive and beautiful and so provocative that any normal man's heart would have first, or he would have vomited hot blood from his mouth, or he would have gone mad or become mentally deranged. But Mara did reprimand their efforts. "Fools, you tried to batter a mountain with the stalks of lotus flowers, to dig up a mountain with your nails, to chew iron with your teeth." So even Mara acknowledges the Buddha's steadfastness. Throughout Buddha's life, Mara continues to show up in the suttas to tempt, mislead, or terrify the Buddha. He would tell him that he should not have given up on the austerities. Mara would take on beautiful or ugly form, offer riches or power, or even by reprimanding the Buddha for taking a nap, he should always meditate, or by saying that human lifespan is long and one need not worry about a spiritual life. The interesting thing is that in all cases, the Buddha sees and understands what is happening. That this is an encounter with Mara. And every time he responds to Mara, addressing him by name. And he would say, "Oh, this is Mara, the evil one." And then he addresses the specific temptation, lie, or illusion that Mara just threw up. And the next lines are the same in all the sutras. Then Mara, the evil one, realizing the blessed one knows me, the fortunate one knows me, sad and disappointed, disappeared right there. And I have a theory that runs counter to the sutras. So in the sutras, it says that the Buddha took his seat and realized his awakening. Mara shows up and fights with him. Who will be dominant? Who will win? I don't believe that Mara showed up after the Buddha took his seat. And I do not believe that Mara left after losing the battle. I think Mara got up with the Buddha that morning. They brushed their teeth together. They went together to the Bodhi tree. They ate their meals together, made decisions together. Because Mara is not an outside force. Mara is in and around us all the time. We just often don't recognize him. Mara is only recognizable when one pays attention. Otherwise, he's part of the stream of the material thoughts and actions that we call I. So Mara is not easily seen. He's not a drooling devil with a pitchfork and with horns. He can look very good and be very successful. He knows all about spiritual journey, and Mara knows the lingo. He knows what to say. Even in the Samyutta Nikaya, the Mara sometimes appears to be wanting to help the Buddha and support what he's doing while actually undermining him. When the Buddha takes a break, he says he should exert more effort. When the Buddha is in the middle of heroic efforts, Mara shows up and says, why don't you take a break? Mara has great confidence and is very certain of himself. He is a personification of hindrances. He is what shakes the center and spiritual stability. He is doubt, distractions, wants, aversions. So the first step of the Buddha winning battles with Mara is recognition. When we recognize doubts, see them as doubts, they lose their power. When the Buddha sees Mara, Mara vanishes. Seeing doubt and uncertainty, the Buddha can overcome doubt and uncertainty, and Mara disappears. Maybe we can see Mara as Buddha's counterimage or shadow, his dark side, the Buddha's own conflicted humanity. I do like the stories of Mara, and I wonder how many stories are not in the Mara Samyutta, the connected discourses about Mara, because Mara kind of snuck in and was not recognized. And maybe Mara had a hand in the next story, the last story I'm going to tell today. And it has to do with doubt and maybe not wanting to do the hard work. Even though Mara is not listed as an actor in this story. So this story is not directly from the sutras, it is from this book, The Life of the Buddha According to the Pali Canon. It draws from several sutras and braids them into a cohesive narrative. This story is really important. It shows how precarious everything is. It tells us about the Buddha's thoughts of not teaching the Dharma. He felt the path was hard, that people were attached to their attachments, and that he frankly did not want to take up the trouble of teaching the Dharma. So here is the last story for today. Now, while the Blessed One was alone in retreat, this thought arose in him. This Dhamma that I have attained is profound and hard to see, hard to discover. It is the most peaceful and superior goal of all, not attainable by mere ratiocination, subtle for the wise to experience. But this generation relies on attachment, relishes attachment, delights in attachment. It is hard for such a generation to see this truth, that is to say, specific conditionality, dependent arising. And it is hard to see this truth, that is to say, stilling of all formations, relinquishing of the essentials of existence, exhaustion of craving, fading of lust, cessation, Nibbana. And if I taught the Dhamma, others would not understand me. And that would be wearying and troublesome for me. Thereupon, there came to him spontaneously these stanzas, never heard before. Enough of teaching the Dhamma that even I found hard to reach, for it will never be perceived by those that live in lust and hate. Men died in lust, and whom a cloud of darkness laps will never see what goes against the stream is subtle, deep, and hard to see, abstruse. Considering this, his mind favored inaction and not teaching the Dharma. Then it occurred to Brahma Sahampati, who became aware in his mind of the thought of the Blessed One's mind. The world will be lost. The world will be utterly lost, for the mind of the Perfect One, accomplished and fully enlightened, favors inaction and not teaching the Dhamma. Then, as a strong man might extend his flexed arm or flex his extended arm, Brahma Sahampati vanished in the Brahma world and appeared before the Blessed One. He arranged his robe on one shoulder and putting his right knee on the ground and raising his hands, palms together towards the Blessed One, he said, Lord, let the Blessed One teach the Dharma. Let the Sublime One teach the Dharma. There are beings with little dust in their eyes who are wandering through, not hearing the Dharma. Some of them will gain final knowledge of the Dharma. When Brahma Sahampati had said this, he said further, in Magadha, there has appeared till now impure Dharma, thought out by men, still stained. Open the deathless gateway. Let them hear the Dhamma the Immaculate has found. Ascend, O sage, the tower of the Dhamma. And just as one sees all the folk around who stand upon a solid pile of rock, survey, O sorrowless, all-seeing sage, this human breed engulfed in sorrow that birth has at its mercy and old age. Arise, O hero, victor, knowledge bringer, free from all debt and wander in the world. Proclaim the Dhamma, for some, O Blessed One, will understand. And the Buddha looked into the world and he found that there are beings with only a little dust in their eyes. And he did decide to teach the Dharma. Thank you very much for listening. And Tim, I was wondering if we could kind of like open the floor for a little while if people have questions. What do you think?
Yeah, sure, that'd be fine.
So if you have any thoughts or any comments, please unmute yourself and speak. And Tim, I think we can stop the recording. Thank you.